Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Ireland's Birth Stories, a podcast created for women to share their experiences with pregnancy and birth. My name is Cora Gernan and I've created this space to enable women to share their experiences from start to finish without feeling shy about the detail.
The podcast is currently brought to you by Waterful plastic-free baby wipes, which contain 99.9% purified water and are both fragrance-free and alcohol-free. The wipes are made from natural cellulose plant fibers, making them so much softer and kinder to delicate skin. Waterful baby wipes are hypoallergenic, having been extensively tested by dermatologists and are approved by the Skin Health Alliance and Allergy UK, accepted by the National Eczema Association, and are also certified by Cruelty Free International and the Vegan Society. Waterful baby wipes are 100% plastic free, 100% biodegradable and 100% compostable. Breaking down in a matter of weeks, they are the best choice for our planet and also your baby's future. Available for purchase in Tesco, selected super values, and can be bought in bulk size on Amazon. Kindful, mindful and waterful. So before I introduce my guest this week, my guest Katie, I just wanted to touch on our space, the space I created on the website a couple of months ago, but has only taken off really in the past few weeks because I've just started chatting about it again. So it's a space for you to chat to other women who are pregnant or who have just had their baby, basically for support, to chat about experiences, to forge friendships. But also there's a space on there called What's Mine Is Yours, and that's for you to post any pre-loved items that you want to either sell or give away for free. And also if you're looking for any items, just pop up a request to see if anyone has anything knocking around the house, which I'm sure a lot of us do, especially in the stage that I am. The drawers are being cleared out, so I'm discovering stuff that I never even opened. So that's what's popping up on the category there over on our space. So I will leave a link in the show notes if you want to sign up. In this week's episode, I share my chat with Katie, who talks me through her journey to motherhood. So Katie suffered an ectopic pregnancy. She has suffered early pregnancy loss. She gave birth to her first little boy via emergency C-section after spending 6 weeks in hospital just before his arrival. Her next birth experience was an elective cesarean birth. And then she gave birth to her most recent little baby via elective cesarean birth as well. She did have her heart set on a VBAC, but she in the end made the right decision for her. So there's lots in this episode. She also discusses PCOS and she shares each of her three experiences with breastfeeding as well. So lots in this episode. Thank you, Katie, for being so honest and sharing as much as you did. As always, I really appreciate it. Enjoy, and I will chat to you all next week. Katie, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. Thank you for coming on to chat to me this evening.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So do you just want to begin by giving us a little introduction to you and your family?
Yeah, so I'm Katie. I'm married to my husband, Dylan, nearly 4 years. We're together nearly 9 years. And we have three children, two boys, Alex and Bobby, who are 7 and 5. And then I've just welcomed most recently my daughter and final addition to the family, Cara, who's now 10 weeks old. Yeah, she is. I'm savouring every moment of it.
So will we go ahead and chat about your pregnancies with the boys, and then we'll really deep dive into your most recent pregnancy with your little girl?
Yeah, well, I suppose just before I had Alex and Bobby, in my previous relationship, I would have had an ectopic pregnancy, and I would have had then a miscarriage as well. So yeah, I suppose those two were kind of very, I don't want to say difficult times, very kind of tough times. And that's what made my pregnancy journey when I met my current husband so difficult. Now, thankfully, with my ectopic pregnancy, it was treated with methotrexate, and I, you know, my tubes were saved, and I didn't need to have any medical intervention. And likewise with the miscarriage, it was very early on, and again, there was no medical intervention needed for that. But that's what paved the way to, I suppose, understanding how difficult it was for me to get pregnant.
And did you have symptoms that you were having an ectopic pregnancy, or did no? Okay.
I didn't know. I hadn't a clue. I went to like our local A&E, Lachlanstown A&E, you know, with thinking I was going to be diagnosed with appendicitis or, you know, some kind of kidney infection. And it was there, you know, I was told you're pregnant, and they had to rush me into Hollis Street by ambulance that evening. And yeah, just kind of, it just happened so fast. And I was in so much pain that I want to say I didn't care, but at the time I just needed whatever was going on to not, yeah, not cause me any more pain. And it was then only after, I suppose, kind of that all happened, then you kind of process and realize, oh my God, you know, the severity of the situation. So I use the word lucky quite a lot, and I probably use that quite a lot throughout the conversation. But I know so many people who haven't been as lucky as I have been. So yes, it's not nice to have lost, but I'm so lucky as well to have what I have with all of my medical issues that I have going on. So I kind of keep that always at the forefront of everything, because there are just people out there that just don't get to be as lucky as I am. So that's how I have to look at it.
And do you know how many weeks gestation you were with your early pregnancy loss?
I was about 6 weeks. So I knew I was pregnant at that stage. I had confirmed it, and I booked my GP's appointment, and I think a couple of days before my GP's appointment I noticed a bit of spotting, and because obviously with the ectopic pregnancy I would have been very cautious of, you know, it happening again, so I just went straight into A&E in Hollis Street, and yeah, it was there then within a couple of hours, you know, they were like, what do you think is the situation? And I said, I don't think the baby's made it. And she said, yeah, you know, there's no heartbeat, and it's just so. And thankfully, you know, there was no medical intervention needed. I didn't, you know, it wasn't a very painful experience to go through. It was like the period. I didn't have crying or anything like that. And, you know, passed very quickly. And, you know, I suppose it kind of paved the way for the future for myself and my partner at that time, and we just weren't in the same places as each other, and we parted ways very amicably, and that's then when I met my now husband, and we have our three children now. So
let's chat about your third pregnancy then. Was your third pregnancy planned?
The third pregnancy, I always when I hear you ask this question, I always think to myself, well, sure, if you're going to be doing it, sure, every pregnancy is planned. So it wasn't, we had talked about children, we hadn't planned on having children straight away, but obviously, you know, it happened. So I like to say it was planned, you know, because we were partaking in that act, knowing what the result could be. But it was a bit of a surprise, because when I had my ectopic pregnancy and my miscarriage, at that point they had diagnosed me with possible endometriosis. There were so many different kind of conditions on the cards with cysts in my ovaries that they found during those two things. So I never really thought that, you know, fertility was going to, I didn't really think that fertility was going to be possible for me. So it wasn't something I had explored. But yeah, peed on the stick in October 2013, and everything, you know, changed, and it was like, wow, like I'm actually pregnant. And then you've obviously got that fear, is it an ectopic pregnancy? You're hanging on to every cramp, you're, you know, every pain. But, you know, went, I got a referral for the early pregnancy unit in Hollis Street, and they confirmed the sac and everything there at like 6 weeks. So I'm very lucky. I have like pictures of my firstborn from like when he was like 5 weeks, 7 weeks, 9 weeks. So I have all of those memories that, again, nobody else, you know, unless it was a routine pregnancy, or unless there was a day pregnant, would get to have. So I was very, very lucky to see it develop like that. So yeah, everything went fine. Everything was going fine. I did the combined. I was public in Holles Street, and I did the combined care. So it was between my own GP up in Loughlinstown Hospital. They do the midwife-led unit, and then into Holles Street then for my kind of major scan and things like that. So everything was going great with that pregnancy up until, I'm going to say, about 24 weeks. So because I was doing the combined care, I was in Loughlinstown Hospital, and so you go there every 2 weeks or so just for checkups. So I went there, and they referred me into Holles Street. They took urine samples, blood samples, and they were watching for protein in my urine, which was kind of creeping up as each kind of day passed.
Okay.
So another 2 weeks passed, that's fine, went back into Loughlinstown. So every time I went into Loughlinstown, they kept sending me back into the hospital, and the 28 weeks they had established that, you know, we're really looking at the possibility of preeclampsia. So they said they'd do one, they do differently now, but they would do this thing where they would do like a 24-hour collection. So to go home with a booklet and collect all my urine for 24 hours and bring it back in. And they'd analyze that and see if the protein had increased even further. And they were just about to discharge me and send me home, you know, to come back again in a week. And the results came back from that urine sample, and that was the last. That morning was the last morning I was in my house before baby arrived. So they had me in hospital, unit 3 up there in Holles Street is incredible. All the staff are just amazing people. I don't know how they do it every day, but yeah, I spent a good 6 weeks of my life up there, from 29 weeks to about 35 weeks. And the constant monitoring your blood pressure, wasn't allowed to leave. I eventually swayed the consultant to let me go out for an hour a couple of the days, just to go over to Grafton Street to buy stuff for my baby, because I hadn't even, you know, there wasn't even a bag packed. I think I bought a cot and, you know, a few bits and bobs, but nothing was done. Like, the house wasn't even, like, a 29 weeks, it's not really something you'd be jumping straight into doing. My husband had to pack my bag for me, you know, didn't have anything with me when I was in hospital that day. It's like, you know, you're getting clothes brought in that you don't really want, but you have to say thanks because they're trying their best, you know, like things like that. So it was very tough. But yeah, we managed to get to 35 weeks, and then my blood pressure just really hit the roof, and no amount of medication was taking it down. So they decided then, I was 29, I think it was 29 in 2 days or something like that. And they decided, okay, well, look, we'll induce you. So I had the gel, or sorry, 35 weeks. So they gave me the gel and four doses of the gel over kind of 24 hours. And nothing was kind of really, I was getting contractions, but it wasn't really progressing. So they decided to break my waters.
Can I just ask you a question? So you were in there for 6 weeks, and
yeah,
it must have been incredibly hard to be in there for 6 weeks. So setting that aside, you then were going to give birth to your first baby. So did you, that's another thing to deal with. And then you have to think of, the house isn't ready, I'm not ready. So when, how did you prepare yourself mentally? Did you attend classes when you were in there? Did you do anything to kind of, did you have preferences, or what had you done to prepare?
All I had was, there was a book, and my auntie dropped me in one day, What to Expect When You're Expecting, you know, that big, massive book. So I read that. I wasn't allowed to go to any
multiple
classes.
Times over, I'd say. It's so much time.
I was looking back through like a notebook from my time there in the hospital, and I was like, ideal baby routine. So feed him at 7, feed him at 11, feed him at 3. And now that I'm obviously, you know, 3 babies in, I'm looking at them like, what was I thinking? You know, I had all these ideas in my head of how it was going to go. It just went completely, you know, just went how it was supposed to go, and not by the book. So yeah, I had that book, which I read. Dipped in and out of. I wasn't allowed to leave the hospital, so I couldn't attend. I got one antenatal class in prior to being admitted. Eventually some consultant said, look guys, she's gonna need some kind of class, so can we get her into something? So they let me walk from, so that they do the antenatal classes in another part of the hospital, but you have to go outside and then around the corner, and then up into Merrion Hall, or I don't know where it is, just literally around the corner, about 2 minutes. And the consultant eventually agreed to let me go with one of those healthcare, you know, the like special assistance nurses. So like, she had to walk me around, sit in the back of the antenatal class, and then walk me back.
Oh my goodness.
Just in case something happened. Yeah. I suppose they were very worried about me. And at the time, I was really annoyed. I was like, I'm stuck in here. I've got so much to do. And I wasn't thinking about, you know, the potential risks that came with preeclampsia, you know, like death. So that was just not my agenda. And I think at one point my mom said to me, she's like, Katie, you have to stop. Like, this is, you're not here because, you know, they want to annoy you. You're here because you know, serious. And I was like, yeah, you know what, you're right. So I gave up getting angry and sad, and I just accepted that this is where I was going to be for the next couple of weeks. And that made the experience much better. And then there was another lady with me as well. She was expecting twins, and she had very similar issues to myself. And you know, you kind of all make friends on the ward, and you get advice from other moms, because, you know, again, I'm going to say the words, I was very lucky. I was very lucky I didn't have children at home. You know, I remember there was a mom in the corridor, and she was like, well done, darling. You know, you did your first wee-wee in the potty. You know, you're amazing. So she's obviously, you know, missing all of these little milestones with her daughter at home. And so, yeah, again, yes, it could have been better. It would have been nicer to have a better ending to my first pregnancy. But in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't too bad, all things considered. So, yeah, I had the induction, I had the gel, I think they did it four times over the 24 hours, and it was grand. It was, you know, you felt the contractions, but nothing kind of really too major. They were painful, but it was fine. And then they decided to break my waters, and then the contractions ramped up a little bit more, and then they kind of started to slow down. So they put me on what they call the trace, the heart monitor. So I started the gels on the Friday, and then Sunday morning they put me on the monitor, and every time I got a contraction, my son's heart rate just kept dropping really, really low. So they brought me down. I was on the unit 3 ward, and then they brought me down to the labor ward, and they were going to do the oxytocin, is it, that they use for induction. And the consultant said, no, the heart rate is dropping too low, we'll have to do surgery. And then another consultant came in about a half an hour later, and they were watching the trace, and they're like, he's actually stabilized, we could probably just give her that medication that stops you from getting infections and let her go for another 2 weeks. And I'm looking at them like, you know, now my blood pressure's going up even higher. It's like, can we just get the baby out, you know, like, it's over now, I can't do anymore. And I was getting, you know, very tired, and like, high blood pressure, you know, is very very hard to deal with, and, you know, at the best of times when you're not even growing a baby. So my husband just said, look, you know, she's had enough, she's been through the mill, she's here 5 weeks 6 weeks, it's better for this baby now if he comes out. So he did. So I had an emergency section, and he arrived, he wasn't breathing. They do like an Apgar score, and his Apgar score was 0 for like the first 3 minutes. So it was like terrifying. You're waiting for that first scream, and eventually it happened. I was showing him very briefly, and then he was whisked off to the NICU. No, he only spent 2 days in the NICU, thank God. He didn't need to have much intervention, just a little bit of help with breathing at the start. But, you know, overall he was doing fine. So he was brought down to, I recovered quite well as well, you know, from the epidural and everything from the section. So then I got him brought down to the ward 2 days later to me. So as it was public, so I was in a ward with all these other mothers who had their babies, and I just had an empty cot with a balloon beside me. Look, again, I suppose there are other mothers out there that just don't get to have that cot beside them. So yeah, it was a couple of days before he came down to me, and I couldn't go up to him because I needed assistance with after having a section. So it was, you're relying on healthcare staff, and, you know, my husband obviously trying to get in, and then so he's like do I bring you up? Can I bring you up? Am I allowed? Then they wouldn't let me walk up to get a wheelchair. So it was just, it was messy. Anyway, we got him down to the ward and all was going well. We tried breastfeeding, but he just wasn't having any of it. And I just wasn't able for it. I just didn't have the energy after everything that I'd been through. So we opted for formula and then he wouldn't feed. He just wouldn't drink. You know, you'd be there trying to force 5 meals, 10 meals into him and he just wouldn't eat, wouldn't drink. And then he ended up with jaundice. So he was under the UV lights then beside my bed. So that added an extra week onto my stay in the hospital. Once the jaundice cleared, then he was able to come home and we got him home and the public health nurse came and sent him back into the hospital again. And he ended up having to stay another 2 nights under the UV lights in the NICU because of the jaundice. And then he came back and was feeding him again, you know, we'd be celebrating getting an ounce into him, you know, be like, yes, he's got 30 mils. And, so you know, other babies are like, you know, drinking 4 ounces at this stage. And you're like, and it was every 3 hours and you'd have to set your alarm and it would take the guts of an hour and a half to feed him the insert and a half trying to get into him and then you're starting it all over again. So yeah, it was and I suppose I'm a control freak as well, and I just wanted to do it myself. I didn't want anybody else to do it because if something went wrong, it was on me, it wasn't on anyone else, you know, like, so, you know, if he had to go back into the hospital, at least I know I've done everything. Whereas if he didn't, or if he had to go into the hospital and I had let other people feed him, I'd be like, well, that's because you fed him, do you know? So, or you didn't feed him properly, you know? So I just needed to be in control of that because I couldn't control anything else. You know, I wasn't able to control how I wanted to deliver my baby. So for the first kind of couple of weeks, it was like, I just couldn't let go. I had to keep him at all times. And he was so tiny. He was born at 5 pounds, 3 ounces, and then he dropped down to like 4 pounds. I think he was like 4 pounds, 7. So yeah, it was just a very tiny, scrawny little baby. And just like, even for the first couple of months, like every time I was a public health nurse, they were like, okay, I think you need to bring him back in. His weight gain just isn't there. And eventually after about three visits to the hospital, after being sent back in, I was like, my son just eats this amount and that's it. You know, he is gaining weight. He's not obviously gaining as much weight as he should, but he's putting on weight. You know, if it's 100 grams or 200 grams, that's what he's putting on. So he's obviously getting something. So whenever I would go to see them, they'd be like, yeah, we're going to send you back into Hollis Street. I'd be like, okay, yeah, no problem. And I'd just go home. I probably shouldn't have, but it was constant because I'd go into Hollis Street and they'd be like, yeah, he's fine. He's what he is for himself. This is what he is. So, you know, like the fact that he is gaining weight, that's all we need to see, you know, how fast he's gaining it. You know, if it was a couple of months down the line and still wasn't there, then fair enough, we'd have to look at something else. But, you know, he's doing it at his pace and that's just it. So you'd be hours in the hospital, you'd be waiting for blood tests to come back, and then you just get sent home saying he's fine, he's keep doing what you're doing. So eventually after about three visits there, I gave up. And yeah, and I think for the first 2 years of his life, he just never ate. Now he's making up for all his lost time and he just constantly eats. I don't know how he copes in school with the amount of times the fridge is open during lockdown for him to eat, like every hour. What's for lunch now? And what's after lunch? And what's after dinner? So I'm not worried about him now. He's flying it now.
How did you feel? Did you feel like you suffered any trauma after everything that you went through?
You know, I know it's such a taboo thing. We don't really talk about it that much, but I started to go to counselling just after, just 2 weeks ago. I'm an overthinker, and I find I just overthink situations to the point where, you know, I'm killing myself in my head. You know, I'm using so much energy overthinking and not just getting on with life. So I decided to go to counselling, and you know, the counsellor asked me, when did the overthinking start? And I said, gosh, it probably would have been roughly about the time that my first son was born. And he was like, and how was that birth for you? And I was like, oh, it's really bad. I said, it was grand, but, you know, I had to stay in hospital and I had to do this. He was like, Katie, that was a traumatic birth. And I was like, okay. He was like, that's where your overthinking has come from. And it was like a light bulb went off in my head. So, yeah, I'm only seeking counselling now after 7 years, and I had absolutely no idea that it was impacting me until I had that conversation 2 weeks ago. So yeah, anybody out there that's had a traumatic birth like that but thinks they're okay, maybe they are, but maybe you're not. And I would definitely, if I could turn back time, I would have gone much earlier. But I didn't know. I didn't know I had a problem until now. So
do you want to move on to your next birth, your next pregnancy?
Yeah. So then again, I suppose planned in the sense that, you know, we knew the risks of having unprotected.
I like how you're putting that, actually. I really like how you're putting that. Yeah. So you're like, well, we know what's going to happen.
Like we knew what was going to happen. But again, with my ovaries and everything, we're like, yeah, you know, it's probably not possible. But yeah, it happened. I remember I was in work and I was walking through Liffey Valley Shopping Centre and I just felt my boobs and I was like, ow, they're sore. And I would have had like mad periods from when I first got them. Like they'd be, you know, get a period this month and not get a period for 2 months. They could be every 5 weeks, every 2 weeks, every 6 weeks. They were very unpredictable. So like any of those conception sticks, what do you call them, the ovulation sticks, wouldn't work well. In I'd have to pee on so many of them to actually find out when I was ovulating, because it could be so hit and miss. I wasn't really expecting to be pregnant, because you know my period is all over the place. But I just felt my boobs and I was like, God, something's not right here. So I just ran into Boots and grabbed a test, and I was like, I'll just do it in the bathroom before I go back to work, because just make sure that there's nothing wrong. And I wasn't expecting to see the two blue lines, and sure enough, it was. I rang my husband and I was like, I think we're going to need an extra place at the table next year. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I think I'm pregnant. So, you know, you're like, okay, can I go home from work? You know, and your boss is everything off again, fine, it's grand. But I'm very good friends with my boss, so I just pulled her to one side, because obviously with the ectopic pregnancy and everything that had gone on, I wanted to make sure she knew that, you know, I might not be there if things weren't going to work out, or if I needed to be in hospital a bit more. So I just pulled her to one side and I just said, look, I'm pregnant. So told her very early, and that was it then until we kind of got to the 12-week mark. Everything was fine. I wasn't referred to the early pregnancy unit by my doctor, but the hospital picked up my chart and they sent me out an early appointment. So I got scanned, I think this time at 9 weeks. There was no cramping, there was no spotting, everything was fine. It was the smoothest pregnancy I've ever had out of them all. You know, your usual aches and pains. The one thing that I tend to have gotten with all my pregnancies is carpal tunnel syndrome.
Okay.
And that was fairly painful now with Bobby's pregnancy, my second child. But everything was going grand, no issues of blood pressure. And you know, we got to kind of like the 24 week mark, and they asked me, did I want to do the combined care again, or did I want to just stick with the hospital? And I said, look, I'll just stick with the hospital, because I was sick of going to the combined care and then being transferred into the hospital every single time. So I was sitting in that cattle mart in Hollis Street, you know, where you move around the chair till you get there. But now looking back, I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, you know, like, yeah, it's annoying sitting there, but you know, like when you're in your head, when you know that you're never going to be sitting in those chairs again, like, you savor every minute that you're in that room for that experience. So everything was grand. Got to 24 weeks, 25 weeks, 26 weeks. Absolutely no issues. They were constantly checking my blood pressure every week I was in, blood taken, you know, heart monitors and ECG, ECG, everything, and everything was fine. And the goal was to have a VBAC, so I got to finally have my antenatal classes, which I never got at the first. But they were so different because I had already had a section, so they were slightly different to what your first kind of experience would be. But it was fine, it was grand. I got to find out, I suppose, what would happen during a VBAC, and you know, they said that all that they'll be able to do for me is break my waters. They won't be able to do anything more because of the scar, and it would be too dangerous and too risky. So I was like, okay, grand. So we got to about 38 weeks and the blood pressure just starts to increase slightly. Now I didn't have to go on any medication or anything like that, but they're just kind of monitoring me. And then it got to 40 weeks and they were like, okay, look, we're going to start you on the medication. And I was like, do you know what? They said your cervix isn't favorable, so we'll need to start you on the medication now. And I said, look, I've gotten this far, I'll just take a section. And then the next day, then they said, okay, right, we've got one, a slot for you tomorrow. So do you want to come back in tomorrow? And I had an elective section, which was an incredible experience compared to the emergency section.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Like, you know, my husband was there with me, you know, he was there for all of the prep work, the introduction, the signing, the forms, you know, we chatted away, we played cards, games, you know, things like that, just to pass the time. But I unfortunately got stuck behind a few emergencies. But again, I only ever kept the positives, you know, in my head, is that I was one of those emergencies 2 years ago. So I know how severe and how dangerous they can be. So look, it is what it is. So we were in there from 6 o'clock in the morning, and my son was born at 8:20 that night. So it was a long wait. And they, you know, they were like, look, you know, we're really sorry. I said, look, I don't mind how long it takes as long as you just do it today. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. So yeah, it was grand. He was delivered perfectly. I tried breastfeeding, didn't quite work in the recovery room. Got going in the, when I was down on the ward with him, and kind of decided to combi feed him. So yeah, I was doing good. He was perfect. He was 6 pounds, 13 ounces. He was good weight, no preeclampsia, no jaundice, drank every mil of the bottle and more. You know, there was no painful feeding. There was no like winding. There was no alarms needed to be set. He woke for his feeds. So it was much better experience. And I was kind of, I suppose, a bit more, what's the word, comfortable, or a bit more kind of relaxed, knowing that what to do and how it goes. I remember my mother-in-law, she'd call in because obviously I couldn't drive and husband had to go back to work, and like, that baby ever awake? And I was like, no, feed sleep. And when you've got a two-year-old, I suppose, at home, that, you know, they do take a look up a lot of your time, so it's trying to balance both. But yeah, perfect, absolutely nothing wrong with them. And a lovely journey that we got to have with them. So yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So when did you decide to try conceive again?
So we got married then in 2018, and we were talking just after we got married, and we're like, you know, would like to have one more, and we did, yeah. But we were also in the process of, you know, possibly buying a house and things like that. So you know, I was trying to decide whether we did that first or bought the house first or had the baby first. But again, I suppose with the way my periods were, you know, just said, look, we'll see how we go. If it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And in May 2019, I was in work and I got this like really sharp cramp. You know, it wasn't like the ectopic pregnancy pain that I'd had. It was much worse. It crippled over to the point where I couldn't walk. I had to call an ambulance and they were like, you know, are you pregnant? And I was like, no, definitely not, because I'd only taken a test like a couple of days beforehand. And I was like, no, definitely not pregnant. You know, I don't know what it is. So again, they were looking at possibly appendicitis. So rushed into telehospital and they were like, you're pregnant. I was like, what? And they're like, yeah. So I was scanned. They don't have the machines like they would have in, you know, the pregnancy hospital. So I did go for an ultrasound where the doctor confirmed there was a pregnancy and they could see heartbeat and the sac and everything. So they kept me in overnight and they, like, you know, monitored me, and I started to bleed a little bit, but, you know, my uterus was still closed and everything was looked fine. My womb was there. So they're like, okay, well, look, we'll send you home and we'll give you a referral letter and you'll need to go into Holles Street A&E because they're better equipped to deal with.
And how many weeks were you at that stage?
I think I was only about 5 weeks.
Okay.
See, it was very hard to tell because I didn't know when I ovulated. So like if I would have gone by my last period date, I would have been like 8 weeks pregnant. But then when you get the scan, it's like, well, actually, no, you're only 5 weeks or something like that. So when they did the proper scan and the measurements, I was 5 weeks. So they saw the heartbeat when I got to Holles Street. Everything was fine. And the pain had kind of subsided. So they booked me and they said, look, we don't know. But the bleeding was still there. And they were like, look, we don't know if, you know, this pregnancy is going to survive. But we'll get you back in next week for another scan and we'll see how the week plays out. They're like, obviously, if you've got any pain or that, you need to come straight back in. So I just continued to bleed the same amount that I would have been bleeding every day up until that point. And then I went back in the next week later. And again, it was like that, you know, scan. And they're like, well, what do you think? I said, I don't know. I said, everything's been kind of okay. I said, but I think you're probably going to tell me that it's, you know, that I've lost the baby. And she said, yeah, look, unfortunately, the heartbeat is gone. And she could, it was just, yeah, it was gone. So yeah, that was tough. I had my two-year-old, my second child with me in the buggy because we didn't have a child minder. And I didn't know that I was going to be told that I had lost. I just assumed that they were going to tell me everything was fine. So I had to call my husband, then he had to come and collect me. And it was just, yeah, it wasn't nice. But I try not to dwell on the losses because of all the positives that I've had. And I remember going to one of those fortune teller medium after I'd had the ectopic pregnancy. And, you know, they said, like, these things happen for a reason. And I always just keep that in my mind. Like, there's nothing I can do. I can't, there's nothing I could have physically done to change that scenario. And it just wasn't meant to be. And I remember when they happened. I couldn't tell you the exact dates. You know, I don't like candles. I like candles on the remembrance days, but I wouldn't dwell on it, you know, as much as maybe other people would. It's just how I am with it. You know, I've fully accepted that these babies just weren't supposed to be in my life. And if I didn't have those situations, I wouldn't have the kids I have now. So but yeah, so then that kind of all the scans and stuff like that, then obviously I was referred then to the gynecology clinic then once that miscarriage happened, because the cysts that would have been in my ovaries were still there from September or from 2010 and 2011. So then from 2019 right through to the end of last year, it was like in and out of the hospital. So from like May 2019 right through, they had done MRIs, they were taking bloods all the time, and they sent my husband in for sperm analysis just to see, you know, I suppose what's going on. They started me on a drug called I can't remember the name of the drug now. anyway, it's a drug for metformin. It's a drug for they give it to women who have polycystic ovaries. So they decided after nearly 9 years of being under their care that I had polycystic ovaries. And I remember, you know, going to my GP on a couple of occasions, you know, because I'd have, you know, facial hair that shouldn't be there, you know, dark hair growing in places that they shouldn't grow. And I was like, I think I have polycystic ovaries. And they're like, well, look, you've had all these checks done and these scans done, so if you did, it would have been picked up by now. And then I was in the gynecology clinic and this woman says, so we're going to give you this medicine, you know, it's really good. It helps with polycystic ovaries and it tries to increase your eggs. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah. I was like, so do I have polycystic ovaries? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, sorry, no one has told me this. You know, so I was like, but I knew I did. And I kept asking the question and nobody would, like, in fact, they just brushed me off. Not just Hollis Street now, like obviously my own GP and any kind of the, like I would have been in the gynecology clinic in Vincent's Hospital as well. So, you know, it wasn't just Hollis Street. I don't like to knock them at all because they're just incredible, incredible people there. But yeah, so it was kind of like, okay, well, I knew it all along. So then we kind of, obviously, we know with polycystic ovaries that it's very hard to get pregnant. So I suppose that's where I was like, well, look, if I've gotten pregnant twice before, I should be able to get pregnant again. And there's a doctor in Hollis Street and she specializes in fertility. Now, my next step was to be referred to her by my gynecology team to discuss, I suppose, fertility for down the line. But that didn't need to happen because after a couple of months of the metformin, I found out I was pregnant then in January this year with my fourth pregnancy. So yeah, it was a tough pregnancy at the start. You know, it was very worrying because obviously with the miscarriage before, you were like, you didn't want to get your hopes up. And we had just between that, we decided to move back home with my mom and dad because we wanted to get the final push for saving for our mortgage. So we kind of parked, obviously, the idea of having another baby at that time. And just kind of happened the way it was supposed to happen, I suppose. The pregnancy journey obviously was unexpected in the sense that we weren't expected to get pregnant. Now, I was taking folic acid and things like that because obviously we just didn't know what way it was going to be for us. But so it was positive, positive pregnancy test in January, and then went to my GP and again referred into the early pregnancy unit in Hollis Street where they confirmed everything was kind of growing as it should. And then at about 9 weeks, I went to the toilet and a gush of blood came out. And I was like, oh no, here we go. And I rang Hollis Street and they were like, look, you know, bleeding is not normal, but it's not uncommon. And, you know, see how you go for the next 24 hours. And if it's, you know, gets progressively worse or it's coupled to cramps, you need to come into us. So the next morning I went straight in. After I'd kind of done all the motherly duties with my other two children, went straight in and yeah, everything was fine. You know, the baby was growing perfectly. And I met this lovely midwife, can't remember her name now, but she was just so nice. And she was like, before she had scanned me, you know, she could see I was very upset. And it was COVID, obviously right in the midst of COVID. So no partners were allowed in. And, you know, nobody there with me, which was, I get why, you know, COVID is obviously a very serious issue. So, you know, I completely understand why the restrictions had to be in place, but it was still tough. And so she was like so nice. She was like, look, we'll see what happens and we'll take it step by step and we'll call your husband if something goes wrong. But look, everything's probably going to be fine and you're just worrying over nothing. And she was right. So she scanned me and she's like, look, there you go. There she is jumping around. And yeah, it was nine or 10 weeks, and yeah, it was perfect. So they're like, look, we come back in a week. So they sent me in again. I think actually I was coming up to my 12-week scan anyway, or 12-week appointment for your first kind of time. So they're like, look, come back in a week and we'll see how we go. And went back a week later, everything was perfect. And then just started the proper pregnancy journey of going in and out of the hospital in between my GP for my doctor's appointments. And because my husband wasn't allowed in, we decided at 16 weeks we'd pay for a scan and we'd find out the gender. at that time as well. And obviously the goal as well was to remove the cyst from my ovaries. So they decided that they were going to remove my my right ovary, my two tubes, and leave me with my left ovary and my uterus. So if I ever wanted to have children again, another child, it would be down the route of IVF, which just wouldn't be financially viable for us, and three is perfect. So I was like, yeah, look, that's fine. You know, that's perfect. So it was until I knew, I suppose, what I was having. I was, you're always like, okay, well, should I sign these forms? Should I do this? And I was like, well, look, the cyst could become cancer, so we have to put that as priority. So I was like, yeah, okay, we'll do it. And they went for a gender scan, and the lady, she was there, she's like, what do you think, what would you like to have? And I said, well, look, we just love a girl, because we've got two boys, and it would just be like the icing on the cake of, you know, such a tough pregnancy journey for us. And she's like, yeah, you're having a girl. And like, I just screamed in the room, and my husband was there, and it was just so lovely. So we came home, we hadn't told anybody, we hadn't told like our parents or anything that you're pregnant.
Okay.
I don't know how I hid it. I don't know how I did it. I was puking it. Like, definitely a completely different pregnancy to the other two. Like, there was no symptoms at all with the other two, just sore boobs and heartburn. For my first two, but this one I was vomiting all the time.
Oh no. Did the twos look after as well? That's hard.
So like, I was getting the kids ready for school, and you know, like, we've got like an ensuite in the bedroom, and I was like, you know, vomiting in the toilet with the door closed, and then my kids would be running in, and they're, you know, mom, what are you doing? I was like, shush, I'm fine, because I didn't want anyone else in the house to know obviously what was going on. So you're trying to do quietly and like not let anyone catch on while you're getting sick. Because my mom, if she had heard me getting sick, she'd have twigged it straight away. There would have been no getting past her. I'm surprised actually I did manage to keep it from her for so long. She was like, I knew something was up, because you just weren't eating your dinners. And like, before that, like, you'd be eating your dinner, I'd be like, oh man, this is gorgeous dinner, and like really, really talking about it and really enjoying it, clear the plate. And then obviously when I found out I was pregnant, and very shortly after, like, I could barely eat half of what was actually, you know, chucking half in the bin, and just not really, I'm like, oh, I'm not really in the mood for dinner. So she's like, I should have copped it. But yeah, so just vomiting with her was just awful, like constantly puking. But it subsided then after about 20 weeks or so. So it was fine. But yeah, so going to Hollis Street then for appointments, and everything was fine, perfect. I think I got to then about 28 weeks or 29 weeks, and then the blood pressure started to creep in. I lost count of how many times they checked me for gestational diabetes. Every time I was in, I had like a glucose challenge test at 12 weeks, one at 16 weeks. They did the tolerance test and the challenge test, I'd say, six or seven times. And eventually I was like, why do you keep doing this? And they're like, well, the results this week could be different next week. I was like, right, okay. I couldn't argue with them, you know. So we did that. No gestational diabetes, but just high blood pressure. So my doctor at 14 weeks, she put me on one of those monitors, and she decided to start me on labetalol, which is a blood pressure drug. And I started to take it, and I would be like feeling really weak, and I'd nearly be falling all over the place. Like, my blood pressure would drop so low. So I went back to my consultant, and he was like, look, just stop taking it for now. And I just think my GP, when she had done the 24-hour test, she had done it when I was really busy in work, like a really hectic week on. I just think the blood pressure was just high from that whole thing. Okay. And she decided to put me on it for whatever reason. And negatively, it just didn't work for me. Like, I was really sick. And my mom at one stage, she's like, will you just stop taking the medicine? It's not helping you. So I decided, right, okay, spoke to the consultant, and we stopped it. And then, yeah, that was fine. Everything was perfect from that moment on. You know, had routine pregnancy, routine appointments, everything was grand, other than the constantly checking me for gestational diabetes. And then about 28 weeks, the blood pressure started to increase again. And then they were like, okay, well, will we admit you? I was like, oh, here we go. So it's just that, like, I stayed one night in the hospital and they were like, look, your blood pressure's fine now today, so you can go home. And it was just, there was no protein in my urine, so they couldn't diagnose it as preeclampsia. So just decided that I was getting, it was hypertension, and I was just had high blood pressure for the pregnancy. So that was it. So I was in and out of the day ward every week, every couple of days actually in Hollis Street. So thankfully they didn't admit me. And once I suppose I got to kind of 39 weeks, then they decided to schedule me for the C-section. So yeah, that's kind of what happened.
Very ready.
Yeah, I was. And you know, I was very cooked, and you know, I could feel this is a completely different pregnancy to my first one. You know, I could feel that things were going quite well, and I just wanted to get this baby out. So they booked me in for a section again with COVID. Obviously my husband couldn't come in, so he waited outside in the car. So what time did I go in at? I went in at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I think he came in then about 1 o'clock. No, it would have been about 12 o'clock, and she was born at 1:30 then. So it was it wasn't too bad. You know, I know there's a lot of people out there that have to sit in cars for hours and hours, and you know, some people didn't get to their birth at all and things like that. But yeah, look, it was fine, and the people in the day ward are just lovely, and you get to talk to other mums as well that are having sections. So yeah, it was good.
You've had two planned sections. Can you there's a few people who I know who are expecting, and they're going to have a planned section as well. Do you want to just run through, because it can be a really nice positive experience, just run through what that looked like for you?
Yeah, so for me it was just so nice. You go in the morning, all the midwives are there, you're kind of seeing them from when they immediately start their shift. They're all in really happy form. You get checked in, and you get your lovely fancy socks that you have to keep on you for the rest of your time in the hospital. And they do your blood work, and yeah, you just sit and wait then until it's time to go up. Then they, just before you get called, you're sitting in the room, and there's a phone, and every time it rings you're like, is that me? Is it going to be me that's being kissed? So I think the phone rang once, and there was a lady before me, she got up, and then the phone rang a second time, and I was texting my friend at the time. I was like, I wonder if this is me, and she's like, I bet you it's you. And yeah, it was. So yes, so that was it. You wait for the phone to ring, and then you get brought up to the theatre. You drink this horrible licorice drink. If you like it, I don't like licorice. It wasn't that it was horrible. Sorry. It's just I don't like licorice at all. So you drink that. And it was actually nice because you haven't had water in so long as well. You're not allowed to drink beforehand. Then you get called in. So the section itself for my third obviously was going to be longer than your average section, because they were doing all the additional work that goes with it. And it was fairly tough trying to get the spinal block in. It was really tough. They tried four times, and on the fourth attempt they said that if it wasn't going in, that they were going to put me asleep. So it was nearly an hour trying to get the spinal block in. Some people are lucky, and the gaps between their spines are much easier to access. Mine unfortunately wasn't, but look, you know, they persevered, and they got there in the end. And yeah, then my husband came in very shortly after that, and within 5 minutes we had our baby in our arms. And this was a different experience, because I could do, like, I could kind of specify what I wanted, and I was so determined this time around to breastfeed. I really wanted to do it. I read about the so you do this pumping, you do like a collection beforehand, and so you collect the colostrum from 37 weeks. So I did that. I was so prepared for it. I read every book there was, joined every Facebook page there was, you know, and listened to everybody, no matter if I didn't agree with what they said or not. I just listened to whatever anybody said, you know, took every piece of advice on board, and decided then when I was in the midst of it what was going to work for me and what wasn't. So I got to have skin to skin, which I never had with the other two. And yeah, it was just so nice. Kept her in my arms for the whole time. And they were like, look, what do you want to do? I said, well, look, I'd love to try and breastfeed. I said, but you know, baby comes first at the end of the day, and if I can't do it and she's hungry, like, I have to feed her. So I'll feed her whatever way it works for her. And the nurses in the recovery were just incredible. There was this one girl and she just said, right, let's do this. And she got a load of towels and blankets and propped them around me. And within 10 seconds, she had latched on and was gone and suckling away. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow. And, you know, they were like, look, it's perfect. Watch your jaw and everything like that. So it went really well at the start. And yeah, she spent the whole time I was in recovery just feeding. And it was just so lovely. I got my husband to take photos of me, and that would never be me. I was like, no, I wouldn't. Yeah, it just wouldn't be me. But I got him to take photos. I was videoing, you know, getting loads of kind of memories and experiences of it, because it was just so lovely. And I do believe that, because I had done I'd obviously breastfed my second born for a couple of weeks before, after he was born. And I don't think my experience would have been as positive with, or I think it would have been more positive with him if I had done that collection in the lead up to it. It's only a new thing. Well, I mean, it's only in the last couple of years, but it certainly wasn't talked about when I was pregnant in 2015 and 16 with him. So I firmly believe that kind of got my boobs ready for the milk. When you have a C-section, I suppose your milk takes a little bit longer to come in. So yeah, I definitely think that's the reason why it worked. And yeah, I fed her for the first kind of 2 weeks solo, just breast milk. But with polycystic ovaries, you have a reduced supply of milk. So your milk, well, it doesn't happen to everybody, but with me, I just wasn't able to produce enough milk to keep her fed. So we were watching her weight gain, and it was kind of dropping. It wasn't gaining as fast as they would have liked. And I was like, oh, here we go again. They were like, oh, look, she looks a bit jaundiced. I was like, oh God, give me the formula. Just let's feed her. I'm not doing this again. So they said, look, no, we don't have to go. You don't jump straight into formula. They're like, look, maybe just give her a top up. So I think up until about 9 weeks. Yeah. So like only last week, I was kind of feeding her myself and topping her up with a little bit of formula. But obviously with a 7 and 5 year old, it's time consuming, you know, and like breastfeeding is incredible. And I've absolutely loved every minute of it, especially at nighttime when you get up to make a bottle that you can bring her into the gym, and, you know, not having to wake people up or turn on lights, and literally, you know, you have her at her fingertips, and it's just been such a lovely experience. But in the morning time when you're trying to get the kids ready for school, my husband's a chef, so he works really long hours. He's gone from 6 o'clock in the morning till 7 or 8 o'clock at night. My mum and dad obviously live at home, they work too, they've got their jobs to go to. So like it really is just me on my own. And as much as I've loved the journey, I just had to make the decision to kind of put a more stable routine in. So she's on formula now, but I've loved every minute of the breastfeeding journey. And I'd do it again in a heartbeat if I could.
Did you feel a difference in the physical recovery in comparison to your second cesarean?
I felt no difference. So obviously they had taken my all the stuff away, and everyone said, well, you do this research. So I'm a Googler. I'm an avid Googler. I just think, you know, if I've got a headache, you know, Google all these symptoms every, you know, that's just me. And I remember doing some research on it, and they were like, look, you know, it's going to be a much harder recovery, and it's going to be harder on your body. And so I was like, I was prepared mentally for the aftermath of what was to come. And I think because I did the midwives come to your house after you've, they take your stitches out at home. And I think it was like day 8 after the section, day 9, and the midwife came and she was like, okay, so if you lie down there now, we'll just have a look at your scar. And you know, you just pull yourself to sit back up again. I just jumped straight back up, and she's like, whoa, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. She's like, I'm grand. I said, actually, can I ask you? I said, I've been told that this is going to be really, really tough recovery. I said, but I'm fine. And she was like, if you're fine, you're fine. You're going to be grand. She said, some people just don't recover as quickly as you. She said, I was at a woman who's had the exact experience, third section, ovaries removed, and she needs more painkillers and she can't get up. She said, so just keep doing whatever you're doing. I said, is something going to happen? Like, am I just going to wake up one day and not be able to move? She said, no, you're doing fine. So I was like, grand. Like, my doctor kind of cleared me to drive after 4 weeks. He said, like, you're doing fine. The scar healed, not as well as the other two sections. It's healed now, but it just took a little bit longer with the third section. That's the only thing, the only difference in terms of recovery, was just the scar healing was a little bit longer. I had one of those Pico dressings as well, so it kind of kept the wound free of kind of all, I suppose, bacteria and things like that. So yeah, like, it was fine. I couldn't fault it, you know. Like, I suppose as it goes, I was, you know, I'm fine. Yeah, it was a good recovery.
Your outlook is amazing throughout your all of your experiences. Your outlook is so positive.
I just have to, like, we've had so much negativity in our lives, you know, with COVID and everything that's been going on. I've lost relatives, you know, in the past couple of months and things like that. And, like, you just have to stay positive. You have to be fulfilled with what you've got. And, you know, as I've said so many times to so many people, like, we shouldn't have kids, really, because polycystic ovaries is, you know, it's so detrimental to fertility. You know, there's very few women out there that can do it or struggle very, and I have to go down the route of IVF, and, you know, so much money and travel and expenses to just have a baby. And here I am, I've had three without any medical intervention, realistically. Like, you know, I haven't had to spend a penny trying to get them. So I have to look at it like that, you know.
Thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks a million for your time.
Thanks,
talk
Katie,
to you soon.
Not at all. Thanks.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your story, as always, you are more than welcome to. Just get in touch over on the website, irelandsbirthstories.ie, or you can reach out via email, cora@irelandsbirthstories.ie. Have a good week, look after yourselves, and chat to you soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.